Chapter 17 comprises, among other important matters, Pinchonian and architectural, and exact relation of the progress made by Mr. Pinchon, the confidence and friendship of the new pupil. It was morning, and the beautiful Aurora, of whom so much hath been written, said, and sung, did, with her rosy fingers, nip and tweak Miss Pecksniff's nose. It was the frolicsome custom of the goddess, in her intercourse with the fair Cherry, so to do, or in more prosaic phrase, the tip of that feature in the sweet girl's countenance was always very red at breakfast time. For the most part, indeed, it wore, at that season of the day, a scraped and frosty look, as if it had been rasped, while a similar phenomenon developed itself in her humor, which was then observed to be of a sharp and acid quality, as though an extra lemon, figuratively speaking, had been squeezed into the nectar of her disposition, and had rather damaged its flavor. This additional pungency on the part of the fair young creature led, on ordinary occasions, to such slight consequences as the copious dilution of Mr. Pinch's tea, or to his coming off uncommonly short in respect of butter, or to other the like results. But on the morning after the installation banquet, she suffered him to wander to and fro among the eatables and drinkables, a perfectly free and unchecked man, so utterly to Mr. Pinch's wonder and confusion, that like the wretched captive who recovered his liberty in his old age, he could make but little use of his enlargement, and fell into a strange kind of flutter for want of some kind hand to scrape his bread, and cut him off in the article of sugar with a lump, and pay him those other little attentions to which he was accustomed. There was something almost awful, too, about the self-possession of the new pupil, who troubled Mr. Pecksniff for the loaf, and helped himself to a rasher of that gentleman's own particular and private bacon, with all the coolness in life. He even seemed to think that he was doing quite a regular thing, and to expect that Mr. Pinch would follow his example, since he took occasion to observe of that young man that he didn't get on, a speech of so tremendous a character, that Tom cast down his eyes involuntarily, and felt as if he himself had committed some horrible deed and heinous breach of Mr. Pecksniff's confidence. Indeed, the agony of having such an indiscreet remark addressed to him before the assembled family was breakfast enough in itself, and would, without any other matter of reflection, have settled Mr. Pinch's business, and quenched his appetite, for one meal, though he had been never so hungry. The young ladies, however, and Mr. Pecksniff likewise, remained in the very best of spirits in spite of the severe trials, though with something of a mysterious understanding among themselves. When the meal was nearly over, Mr. Pecksniff smilingly explained the cause of their common satisfaction. "It is not often," apostrophe he said, "Martin, that my daughters and I desert our quiet home, to pursue the giddy round of pleasures that revolves abroad. But we think of doing so today." "Apostrophe, indeed, sir." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried the new pupil. "Yes, apostrophe," said Mr. Pecksniff, tapping his left hand with a letter which he held in his right. "I have a summons here to repair to London, on professional business, my dear Martin, strictly on professional business, and I promised my girls, long ago, that whenever that happened again, they should accompany me. We shall go forth tonight by the heavy coach like the dove of old, my dear Martin, and it will be a week before we again deposit our olive branches in the passage." "When I say olive branches," apostrophe observed Mr. Pecksniff, "in explanation, I mean, our unpretending luggage." "Apostrophe, I hope the young ladies will enjoy their trip," apostrophe said Martin. "Oh, that I'm sure we shall," apostrophe cried Mercy, clapping her hands. "Good gracious, Cherry, my darling, the idea of London!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, ardent child!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mr. Pecksniff, gazing on her in a dreamy way. "And yet there is a melancholy sweetness in these youthful hopes. It is pleasant to know that they never can be realized. I remember thinking once myself, in the days of my childhood, that pickled onions grew on trees, and that every elephant was born with an impregnable castle on his back. I have not found the fact to be so, far from it, and yet those visions have comforted me under circumstances of trial. Even when I have had the anguish of discovering that I have nourished in my breast an ostrich, and not a human pupil even in that hour of agony, they have soothed me. Apostrophe, at this dread allusion to John Westlock, Mr. Pinch precipitately choked in his tea, for he had that very morning received a letter from him, as Mr. Pecksniff very well knew. You will take care, my dear Martin, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, resuming his former cheerfulness, that the house does not run away in our absence. We leave you in charge of everything. There is no mystery, all is free and open. Unlike the young man in the Eastern tale who is described as a one-eyed almanac, if I am not mistaken, Mr. Pinch? Apostrophe, a one-eyed calendar, I think, sir, apostrophe faltered Tom. They are pretty nearly the same thing, I believe, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, smiling compassionately, or they used to be in my time. Unlike that young man, my dear Martin, you are forbidden to enter no corner of this house, but are requested to make yourself perfectly at home in every part of it. You will be jovial, my dear Martin, and will kill the fatted calf if you please. Apostrophe, apostrophe, there was not the least objection, doubtless, to the young man slaughtering and appropriating to his own use any calf, fat or lean, that he might happen to find upon the premises, but as no such animal chanced at that time to be grazing on Mr. Pecksniff's estate, this request must be considered rather as a polite compliment than a substantial hospitality. It was the finishing ornament of the conversation, for when he had delivered it, Mr. Pecksniff rose, and led the way to that hotbed of architectural genius, the two-pair front. Let me see, apostrophe he said, searching among the papers, how you can best employ yourself, Martin, while I am absent. Suppose you were to give me your idea of a monument to a Lord Mayor of London, or a tomb for a sheriff, or your notion of a cowhouse to be erected in a nobleman's park. Do you know, now, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, folding his hands, and looking at his young relation with an air of pensive interest, that I should very much like to see your notion of a cowhouse? Apostrophe, apostrophe, but Martin by no means appeared to relish this suggestion. A pump, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, is very chaste practice. I have found that a lamp post is calculated to refine the mind and give it a classical tendency. An ornamental turnpike has a remarkable effect upon the imagination. What do you say to beginning with an ornamental turnpike? Apostrophe, apostrophe, whatever Mr. Pecksniff pleased, apostrophe said Martin, doubtfully. Stay, apostrophe said that gentleman. Come. As you're ambitious, and are a very neat draftsman, you shall try your hand on these proposals for a grammar school, regulating your plan, of course, by the printed particulars. Upon my word, now, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, merrily, I shall be very curious to see what you make of the grammar school. Who knows but a young man of your taste might hit upon something impracticable and unlikely in itself, but which I could put into shape. For it really is, my dear Martin, it really is in the finishing touches alone that great experience and long study in these matters tell. Ha, ha, ha. Now it really will be, apostrophe continued Mr. Pecksniff, clapping his young friend on the back in his droll humor, an amusement to me, to see what you make of the grammar school. Apostrophe, Martin readily undertook this task, and Mr. Pecksniff forthwith proceeded to entrust him with the materials necessary for its execution, dwelling meanwhile on the magical effect of a few finishing touches from the hand of a master, which, indeed, as some people said, and these were the old enemies again, was unquestionably very surprising, and almost miraculous. as there were cases on record in which the masterly introduction of an additional back window, or a kitchen door, or half a dozen steps, or even a water spout, had made the design of a pupil Mr. Pecksniff's own work, and had brought substantial rewards into that gentleman's pocket. But such is the magic of genius, which changes all its handles into gold. When your mind requires to be refreshed by change of occupation, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, Thomas Pinch will instruct you in the art of surveying the back garden, or in ascertaining the dead level of the road between this house and the finger post, or in any other practical and pleasing pursuit. There are a cartload of loose bricks, and a score or two of old flower pots, in the backyard. If you could pile them up, my dear Martin, into any form which would remind me on my return, say of St. Peter's at Rome, or the Mosque of St. Sophia at Constantinople, it would be at once improving to you, and agreeable to my feelings. And now, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, in conclusion, to drop, for the present, our professional relations and advert to private matters, I shall be glad to talk with you in my own room, while I pack up my portmanteau. Apostrophe, Martin attended him, and they remained in secret conference together for an hour or more, leaving Tom Pinch alone. When the young man returned, he was very taciturn and dull, in which state he remained all day. So that Tom, after trying him once or twice with indifferent conversation, felt a delicacy in obtruding himself upon his thoughts, and said no more. He would not have had leisure to say much, had his new friend been ever so loquacious. For first of all Mr. Pecksniff called him down to stand upon the top of his portmanteau and represent ancient statues there, until such time as it would consent to be locked. And then Miss Charity called him to come, and cord her trunk, and then Miss Mercy sent for him to come and mend her box, and then he wrote the fullest possible cards for all the luggage, and then he volunteered to carry it all downstairs, and after that to see it safely carried on a couple of barrows to the old finger post at the end of the lane, and then to mind it till the coach came up. In short, his day's work would have been a pretty heavy one for a porter, but his thorough goodwill made nothing of it, and as he sat upon the luggage at last, waiting for the Pecksniffs, escorted by the new pupil, to come down the lane, his heart was light with the hope of having pleased his benefactor. I was almost afraid, apostrophe said Tom, taking a letter from his pocket and wiping his face, for he was hot with bustling about, though it was a cold day, that I shouldn't have had time to write it, and that would have been a thousand pities, postage from such a distance being a serious consideration, when one's not rich. She will be glad to see my hand, poor girl, and to hear that Pecksniff is as kind as ever. I would have asked John Westlock to call and see her, and tell her all about me by word of mouth, but I was afraid he might speak against Pecksniff to her, and make her uneasy. Besides, they are particular people where she is, and it might have rendered her situation uncomfortable, if she had had a visit from a young man like John. Poor Ruth! Apostrophe, Tom Pinch seemed a little disposed to be melancholy for half a minute or so, but he found comfort very soon, and pursued his ruminations thus. I'm a nice man, I don't think, as John used to say.
John was a kind, merry-hearted fellow. I wish he had liked Pecksniff better,
to be feeling low, on account of the distance between us, when I ought to be thinking, instead, of my extraordinary good luck in having ever got here. I must have been born with a silver spoon in my mouth, I am sure, to have ever come across Pecksniff. And here have I fallen again into my usual good luck with the new pupil. Such an affable, generous, free fellow, as he is, I never saw. Why, we were companions directly. And he a relation of Pecksniff's too, and a clever, dashing youth who might cut his way through the world, as if it were a cheese. Here he comes, while the words are on my lips, said Tom, walking down the lane, as if the lane belonged to him. Apostrophe, in truth,
The new pupil, not at all disconcerted by the honor of having Miss Mercy Pecksniff on his arm, or by the affectionate adieu of that young lady, approached as Mr. Pinch spoke, followed by Miss Charity and Mr. Pecksniff. As the coach appeared at the same moment, Tom lost no time in entreating the gentleman last mentioned to undertake the delivery of his letter. "Oh! ," said Mr. Pecksniff, glancing at the superscription. "For your sister, Thomas." "Yes, oh yes, it shall be delivered, Mr. Pinch. Make your mind easy upon that score. She shall certainly have it, Mr. Pinch." ," he made the promise with so much condescension and patronage that Tom felt he had asked a great deal this had not occurred to his mind before, and thanked him earnestly. The Miss Pecksniffs, according to a custom they had, were amused beyond description at the mention of Mr. Pinch's sister. Oh, the fright! The bare idea of a Miss Pinch! Good heavens! Tom was greatly pleased to see them so merry, for he took it as a token of their favor and good-humored regard. Therefore he laughed too, and rubbed his hands, and wished them a pleasant journey and safe return, and was quite brisk. Even when the coach had rolled away with the olive branches in the boot, and the family of doves inside, he stood waving his hand and bowing, so much gratified by the unusually courteous demeanor of the young ladies, that he was quite regardless, for the moment, of Martin Chuzzlewit, who stood leaning thoughtfully against the finger post, and who after disposing of his fair charge had hardly lifted his eyes from the ground. The perfect silence which ensued upon the bustle and departure of the coach, together with the sharp air of the wintry afternoon, roused them both at the same time. They turned, as by mutual consent, and moved off arm in arm. "How melancholy you are!" ," said Tom. "What is the matter?" "Nothing worth speaking of," said Martin. "Very little more than was the matter yesterday, and much more, I hope, than will be the matter tomorrow. I'm out of spirits, Pinch." ," cried Tom, "now do you know I am in capital spirits today, and scarcely ever felt more disposed to be good company. It was a very kind thing in your predecessor, John, to write to me, was it not?" ," said Martin carelessly. "I should have thought he would have had enough to do to enjoy himself without thinking of you, Pinch." ," Just what I felt to be so very likely, Tom rejoined. "But no, he keeps his word, and says, 'My dear Pinch, I often think of you, and all sorts of kind and considerate things of that description.'" "He must be a devilish good-natured fellow," said Martin, somewhat peevishly. "Because he can't mean that, you know." "I don't suppose he can, eh?" said Tom, looking wistfully in his companion's face. "He says so to please me, you think?" "Why, is it likely," rejoined Martin, with greater earnestness, "that a young man newly escaped from this kennel of a place, and fresh to all the delights of being his own master in London, can have much leisure or inclination to think favorably of anything or anybody he has left behind him here? I put it to you, Pinch, is it natural?" After a short reflection, Mr. Pinch replied, in a more subdued tone, that to be sure it was unreasonable to expect any such thing, and that he had no doubt Martin knew best. "Of course I know best," Martin observed. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.